This episode is brought to you by SD Sober Living. If you or someone you know needs a safe and supportive recovery home, then reach out to SD Sober Living at www.sdsoberliving.org or call 619-625-0769. That's 619-625-0769. Come get some San Diego recovery and some fuck fentanyl at SD Sober Living. Fuck fentanyl. My name is Luis Romero, and I am the fuck fentanyl guy. Today is going to be a really special episode. I do not actually have a special guest today. I really wanted to put that button up there. Today is 11 years clean and sober, and I'm not going to jerk off myself by putting the applause button. But I wanted to do this episode of a little deeper dig into my backstory. Because I know in the first episode, it was mostly for Kylie, you know. So where it all started for me is I grew up in Chula Vista. I didn't have the worst upbringing in the world. I honestly really don't think so. At one point, you know, I think I even was a little spoiled. Well, maybe pretty spoiled. You know, I grew up in a line of alcoholics and addicts in my family, and I definitely had my fair share of seeing that growing up. And well, you know, the first example would probably be my uncle Ruben was a methamphetamine addict, and he struggled a lot throughout his entire life, and he was kind of just made as that terrible, you know, example, you know, like don't be like him type of deal. And it's unfortunate that he had to take that role. Now I think about it, you know, but it is what it is. And you know, he had his fair shares of consequences for sure. And you know, my father definitely was not a fan of him while he was alive. It is what it is as well. You know, my uncle made a fool out of himself several times, and then one incident with my mom, you know, it definitely was kind of the candle that the straw that broke the camel's back. And, you know, I was kind of like, you know, a kid just playing around, and my dad just grabbed me. And we went from living with my grandparents to like not being allowed to see them and all this, you know, drama. And I really didn't know what was going on. But all it was kind of coming down to it was drugs. You know, this is all because of drugs. And ironically, we actually lived like a couple blocks away as soon as we moved out of my grandparents' house. It wasn't like we were really that far, but you know, my dad had a giant resentment towards my uncle, and it is what it is. And you know, I other than that, you know, I just kind of wanted to stay clear from drugs. You know, I remember all those corny little just say no campaigns and that whole like, dare, all that stuff. And it wasn't really necessary for me. I mean, I felt like at the time I was just like, well, I don't want to do that shit. And I wasn't really interested. I just wanted to be a kid, you know, play video games and fuck around with my friends and have fun, you know. But I definitely grew up having some insecurities and definitely a lot of addict-like behavior. I wasn't a fan of school, and that was a big fucking problem for my dad. He wanted me to do good in school, and it just never happened. And, you know, I was kind of like, always behind. There was a lot of talks about, you know, putting me in those, like, you know, intermediate classes or like classes that were like for kids with humongous disciplinary problems, or, you know, like the bad kids, you know, as they say, you know. And also, you know, even like special ed at one point, I mean, they just didn't know what to do with me. I wasn't really interested in school. And you know, when I was 10 years old, my dad, who definitely I would say had alcoholism and addiction, you know, to a degree. And, you know, he was a pretty stand-up person. I you know, I grew up loving my dad and respecting him, but he definitely was sneaky, and he had, you know, a couple defects of character for sure that would probably, you know, make him an addict, I guess you could say. And my dad was in law enforcement at one point of his life, and he was really proud of it. You know, he just didn't like it when he actually did the job, and he wanted to study law and stuff like that. And you know, he worked as a subcontractor. You know, he was a pretty stand-up guy, even though he was a cop. man. And, you know, when I was 10 years old, my dad, you know, passed away. And, it definitely, was because of abuse of medication. You know, he was not in the greatest of health either. You know, he kind of, I think, just had like this, I don't know, I was thinking about it the other day, like maybe like a crystal ball. Like he knew his time on earth wasn't very long, and it made a lot of sense on why he did certain things and said some things. And, well, when he actually passed away, you know, he was 33 years old, you know, he kind of obviously left that little void. You know, now I don't really have a, you know, at one point I was ready, you know, I kind of accepted that he was going to pass away, but I just wasn't, ready to grow up without a dad. You know, that part, you know, you're really never ready for. And I you know, kind of moved around from different parts of Chula Vista, and finally my mom got this spot right by the 5 freeway. And you know, it wasn't the greatest neighborhood in the world. We were always kind of in some pretty rough ones here and there, but like, you know, this one was pretty active, and it was pretty obvious too. And but you know, it is what it is. You know, my mom was a single mom trying to raise two kids, and she did the best she could. And you know, so I definitely had some, you know, unpleasant encounters growing up in that environment. And when I was 13, I drank alcohol for the first time. And alcohol, I definitely didn't consider it a drug or anything like that, like a narcotic. But I definitely was really curious on what was the big deal about it. Like, you know, and I honestly thought I was going to become an alcoholic, like a massive drinker. because I kind of seen that pattern, you know, throughout my family, and I thought that was going to be me for sure. And when I didn't even like the taste of it, and I didn't really even care for the feeling of it either, it was just like, you know, well, I guess also too, I just had some beers too. It wasn't like I was really trying to reach out for it, but I was so underwhelmed. I just got over it. And I started, you know, a little shortly after that, I started to smoke some weed. And I liked weed a lot more than alcohol. And I definitely would try to get it whenever I could, whenever it was available. But it didn't, you know, ruin my life or anything. And also, people also thought I was always on weed, even though I didn't smoke. You know, I just look like this. And so, you know, when I actually did start smoking, you know, I just kind of, I really enjoyed the effects. And I kind of, you know, at one point thought I could like focus and stuff like that. You know, I got through school. I wasn't really like the best student. I never read a book from front to back until I was 19, but I definitely got around, and I definitely, was able to, somehow graduate high school without reading a book. So that was an accomplishment here. And then, around high school though, I, was also, introduced to cocaine and stuff like that. It was like, you know, kind of like obviously a narcotic, and it's kind of dangerous and stuff like that. And, you know, I definitely, was kind of curious about it though, to seeing like, you know, like what was really the big deal about it, you know, cause my uncle was on meth and he wasn't on coke. So I never really saw any danger to cocaine. And, you know, I just got kind of a little curious, I guess, you know, and man, I really enjoyed it though. cocaine was fun. It was a very fun drug to abuse, you know, turning, you know, not so shy and not so reserved when I'm on cocaine. And you know, just kind of just being a little mischievous, I guess you could say. And during high school as well, you know, there was some guys, you know, slamming heroin, and you know, they weren't in my school. They were older, you know. But you know, when I was out in my little adventures, I seen them, you know, slamming that shit, and I was like, kind of, I kind of didn't like it. I thought heroin looked kind of gross and sketchy, and it just looked so like it looked dangerous. It looked like it was like this like totally taboo thing to do, because it's like, well, you're gonna die, you know, you're gonna shoot up and you're gonna die. Like, why would I want to do that? Like, I just want to have fun and, you know, and socialize and stuff like that, and recreational. Like, I don't want to play Russian roulette and possibly not wake up. And man, I guess a couple years down the line, this gentleman was, you know, in his mid-20s at the time. You know, he kind of got us all, you know, hooked one by one. And, you know, I remember, you know, my best friend Phil, you know, started dabbling with it. And then I just kind of followed suit, I guess. And it was kind of just like this like insane like feeling I've never had in my life when I did my first issue. It was like just like that ultimate I guess relief, but just like I just felt like I felt so comfortable being myself. And I, you know, like what I had thought alcohol was going to be, heroin was 100% it. Like, you know, like the universe made sense to me, and my brain, I felt like it was completely wired the right way. And I just wanted to feel like I was on this high forever. I never wanted it to stop. You know what I mean? Like, I never, like, I knew that this drug was meant to be in my life, and I was going to do it as much as I can. And if I can die high on heroin, that was an amazing goal. And that kind of got things started. And You know, definitely things were a little chaotic in the home front. Once heroin came into the picture, and I was able to like get some things accomplished. Like, you know, I graduated high school and then I got a job, and you know, I somehow, you know, held it down. And you know, had like that double life, you know, and because, you know, the lie was, you know, super fresh, and it was like, and I can just go with it, you know what I mean? And I got strung out for, I guess, like 3 years, yeah. And, you know, I started hanging out with, you know, the homies right here around, actually in this neighborhood right here. And, you know, they were all in and out of the system. And I was like the one with the clean record, you know, everything I had done, you know, from stealing and, you know, selling and, you know, and all the dumb shit, you know, you mean all the little fights and all the little bullshit, acting tough, you know, I got away with it all. And the only thing, you know, I guess I just kind of like just thought I was kind of a little invincible, I guess, you know what I mean? Like that, like, oh, I'm never going to get caught. And I could hang out with the most burnt fucking people and I won't get caught. And that's exactly what happened. I hung out with my homie Ghost, and he fucking totally burnt me out. And, you know, he was smoking a cigarette outside. He had just got out of prison, and we were all celebrating, cooking an issue in his grandma's house. And, you know, he went outside and he saw a cop, and he ran, and he just was like yelling, "The hoolahs are coming, the hoolahs are coming." And then the, you know, as soon as he said that, you know, I immediately dropped my, you know, everything I was doing. I was cooking up my shot, and I dropped it, and I just ran, and I jumped over the bathroom of that room that we were at. I jumped through the window, and I fucking hopped the fence, and I'm running down Max Field or Max Hill. And then my homie Blanco jumped in a puddle, and Ghost, I think I already got busted. And then I was running, and they the hoolahs that were looking for him ended up finding me, and then I caught my case. And that was pretty much where it all started as far as the legal system goes. And now no longer a clean record, and now I'm going to kick heroin full cold turkey. And that was terrible. It was the worst fucking withdrawals ever. Thought I was gonna die. Like, I puked so fucking much, man. I mean, you know, there was no harm reduction. I felt really sympathetic for people like that. They just give you diarrhea medicine and, you know, kind of tell you tough fucking titty. And after that, I got OR'd. So, you know, the bright side was, you know, I pretty much got this chance to kind of redeem myself, you know. And I actually didn't even think about it before, but I could have fought that case. But I you know, I didn't know nothing at the time about the legal system. And regardless, you know, I'm grateful for everything that's happened after this. And I went to my first NA meeting, and I was it was in Sprung Valley. And it was really shitty. I hated it. I just totally didn't want relate to these people. You know, this guy was sharing about I was rescued by the police, and I just thought he was a fucking loser. And I thought everyone here was, you know, just smoked out the game and, like, you know, lame. And, like, why would you want to be clean? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you know, I never really was familiar with the recovery and all that. And I didn't want to be familiar with the recovery either. And shit, man. After that, I went to rehab. It was a place called House of Metamorphosis, and I hated it. It was not a nice place for me. You know, I mean, I'd already had served fucking dope in this fucking place, and I knew it was a shitty rehab, and I just, you know, kind of agreed to make people happy. Really, that's all it was. And then, fuck, it didn't work out very well for me, though. You know, I graduated and all that, but, you know, I didn't learn anything. You know, it was just doing time, and I got the fuck out. And, you know, well, I guess my mom said at least I made some friends. So I guess that's a plus. Shout out to the homies. And then 2011. And then, okay, so after that, I kept getting high, and I kept getting strung out, really. And like, fuck, dude, I mean, it was really, really bad. You know, I mean, I'm getting fucking lectured by my fucking connects, dude. Like, you know, one in particular, rest in peace, he passed away a couple years ago, but he'd always tell me, like, man, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, you need to get clean, man. Get the fuck away from this shit. Shit is poison. And, you know, I'd always just go, yeah. And then I take my sack and I go. And, you know, ironically, actually, I did end up, we ended up going to rehab together. Totally different story, but I just couldn't get clean, man. And it was bad. I was living with my grandparents at one point, and my uncle was using, I was using, we were both being terrible. And you know, but my uncle was still he was still like kind of like handling business better than me, though. You know, at least he was working. I wasn't even doing that. You know, if I was working, it would be because he gave me work. And that was a whole other thing. But I really appreciated him doing that for me, though, because, like, I already had burned so many bridges, and I think he knew that, and he just wanted to help me out. And, after that, I went to, So I went to go do something that I've never done ever in my life, or something I've done very rarely, and I went to go smoke some meth. And when I smoked this meth, it was like the most insane like paranoia of going to jail. And I was really scared that, you know, like, because I had just realized that I hadn't done anything. I had been on the streets for 8 months, and I even caught another case, and I wasn't doing shit, man. And time was ticking, and that court date was like in August, like mid or late August, and it was already like mid August. So I every time I try to check into a rehab, I just couldn't fucking commit to it, man. Like, at one point, I mean, there was these guys, you know, that was kind of like in this I don't know how to really call it. I guess kind of like a rehab for like Hispanic guys, you know, that, you know, like Latino Chicano kind of program up in Chula Vista. They were like trying really hard to get me in there, you know, because they already knew that I was strung out. And I remember one time, you know, they even had a van. They're like, hey, come on, Lise, you gotta come with us, you know, you come on, it's time to get clean. And I'm just like, I just need to, I'll meet you guys, okay? And I'm like, I'm just gonna go to this house real quick. Oh, we know where that house is, that's the dope house. I'm like, no, look, I'm gonna get my stuff in there and I'll be right back. Never came back. So I burned all these bridges, and fucking the last one was this behavior modification program called CRASH, short term. I think it's short term two or whatever, maybe one. I don't know. Anyways, that CRASH was the last one, man. It was like I fucked up all, you know, too many times, and I was on their waiting list for 3 months, and it was really strange because usually CRASH is like the easiest program. Usually fucking people always are in and out of there because it's so hard. and especially in those times. And then I didn't know why. I was just on their waiting list, and they never called me or anything like that. So I was fine, like, just trying to, you know, buy time, you know, more getting high time for me. So I wasn't complaining. But now that the clock was ticking, I was like, okay. And I'm high as fuck on meth. I came back to my grandma's house, like, at, like, 11 o'clock at night. And I had this fire in me, and I went into our house phone, or our little house phone that we have. And I fucking dialed, and I fucking left a fucking angry voicemail on the intake office, Lydia's fucking number. And I just kind of went off, like, I've been on your waiting list for 3 months and I haven't got a single call back. I'm going to go to jail, and it's all your fault. And like, this whole fucking little tweaker rant. And I just fucking clicked, and then I crashed out. And then, like, the next day, my grandma, you know, I was like, I come to, and my grandma tells me this lady called me, and I'm like, what lady? And I got the house phone, and I'm like, yeah. And they're like, hi Elise, this is Lydia from Crash, and I'm ready to I have a bed available for you. And I'm like, really? Like, I need more time. And then, so 3 days later, you know, after I had completed my mission and I had, you know, injected a speedball, I you know, grabbed some methadone pills. And I didn't even know if they even worked, but I fucking didn't care. I think it was more of a mental thing. And I went and I swallowed them all, and I went to Crash ready. And fuck, man. And you know, I kicked in there. Not a fun place to kick. They don't give you bed rest when you're fucking withdrawing. You still program with all everybody else. And you know, again, there's no harm reduction involvement. You know, there's no methadone or Suboxone. You know, it's just like, you're tough titty. And fucking, I'm so grateful though, I went there, man, because I was in such a low point in my life. And I mean, I really, like, had nothing going on for me at all, man. And shit was already, like, you know, getting super, super dark. And you know, Crash had, you know, a bunch of stupid rules, but, you know, they really, you know, had a lot of camaraderie, and they, you know, they had some good, they had good tools for us. You know, it was brought in an extreme way, you know. And I'll just, you know, example it. You know, there's a thing called behavior modification that they throw you in encounter groups. And I've only been encountered, like, I think twice, or not that many times, like, in general. For 93 days, it's pretty impressive, actually. But I'm a low key person. And yeah, you know, they put you in a circle, and they kind of just make you aware of all your defects of character, and you can't say fucking shit. You have to shut up, and you have to, you know, post up too, you know, and it's really annoying. And then you say thank you right after they go off on you, and you really just want to beat the shit out of them, but you can't. And God, so after all that, you know, I did the 93 days in there. And honestly, I kind of took a cowardly way out too, you know. It was I went to court, and I fucking went with the homie from East Side, and we got in there, and I told him, hey man, I'm gonna be honest with you, if the court says I can go, I'm gonna bail. And I just told him, like let's see how this goes, man, but like, if it does go that way, fucking throw me under the bus and tell them I fucking left you, man. And you can at least have a little time off that out of that place for an extra hour. So we did that, and yeah, it went into my favor, and I left. I didn't even pick up my belongings. I fucking left. And I went back to my mom's and went to go stay there. And of course, like graduating crash, you know, I learned a lot, but I also wasn't ready. And then I had reservations, and I definitely think, you know, not looking back at it now, like I definitely had ulterior motives, even though like my intentions, I did want to stay clean. I just wasn't ready to commit to it. You know, I wasn't ready to change or anything like that. And so, you know, I got out and I walked from my mom's house in Chula Vista to a homeless encampment called the Jungle in National City. It's pretty pretty infamous, especially at the time. You know, they had a lot of trees and bushes and shit where, you know, a bunch of homeless people can kind of hide and blend in and then just cause chaos after that. And a very reliable drug source. So I picked up a 10 of heroin, and that was enough for one shot there. And then one shot after my mission is over, I walked back to my mom's, and I thought that, you know, this was going to be the last one. You know, like I thought it was like, this is it. I'm going to change my life. And I'm going to, you know, announce myself as a newcomer, but after this one shot, you know what I mean? And I didn't do any of that shit. I fucking got strung out again. I fucking got strung out for another 3 months. And fuck, man. I mean, during that time, it just, like, nothing felt like a victory, man. Like, I knew it was only a matter of time till it all ends again. Whether I'm dead or if I'm back in jail, I didn't know. But I just, I still went with it, man. And March 5th, 2013, 11 years ago, you know, I had, I was trying to get off heroin, only, so I can have a negative test for probation. And originally my plan was to go on methadone, you know, and, it was a lot harder to get on methadone at that time, but it was to get on methadone and just kind of, you know, show progress to my probation office and say, look, I'm doing this, and you know, now you can leave me alone. And I couldn't even do that. I just, that fucking void, man. You know, as soon, you know, that methadone wasn't enough for me, man. Like, I needed the fucking action. I needed to fucking go fucking score money and fucking inject drugs. You know, that was all I wanted to do. It was the only thing that made me feel alive. So, of course, I went to the fucking wheels fall out. And that day I had just got a new connect. He was a paisa, and he had some good shit. It was like, you know, and paisas have very efficient service, and it was awesome. It was just like, it felt like everything was going great. Like, it didn't matter that I possibly could die. It didn't matter that, you know, I'm going to go back to jail now for sure. And it didn't matter that I had nothing going on, you know, but I'm walking down Broadway fucking ecstatic. And now the only choice was, where do I shoot up? You know, I could walk this way, and I can walk to my mom's house and, you know, do an issue in her bathroom, or I can go to this McDonald's. This is much more closer to me. So, of course, I sided with the McDonald's. And, you know, it was very reliable. You know, they never bothered me. And fucking, as soon, like, before I even, like, hit the fucking parking lot, you hear that boo, see the lights. And I was like, this motherfucker, dude. Oh, and this cop just fucking like, I mean, puts on the park and just fucking just marches out. He's all, hold up, man, you are totally tweaking. And I told him, I'm not a tweaker. And he just goes on his little fucking computer and in his car. And it's like, oh, says you got caught with heroin a bunch of times. You're a heroin addict. And he was convinced. I don't know why, dude. Like, he was convinced that I was, like, selling a lot, you know, like, because every heroin addict just has to have a lot of money to support this habit. You can't be broke. And, you know, and I told him, I don't sell heroin. Like, nope, sorry. And that was it. And this motherfucker couldn't find shit too. You know, I had just picked up a gram and he couldn't even find it. And so, like, he was looking in these fucking bushes and shit, like, with his flashlight, kind of like a tweaker, actually, now I think about it, but he's looking for this, like, this clavo that he's gonna, you know, he's gonna come up and he's gonna give me a big bust. And it didn't happen because it didn't even exist. Like, but while he was doing that, I was in the back of his cop car and I got to, you know, secure my sack, and I took it with me in county. And then I, you know, got transferred from Chula Vista jail to San Diego Central. And, you know, before bend and cough, I fucking, I did all my dope right there, right? Just right there in front of fucking all of these fucking fools that they probably didn't know what the hell was going on. Or maybe they did. But anyways, I did everything and I got fucking obliterated. Like, I didn't even care if I fucking OD'd in jail. And I functioned enough, you know, and I blacked out. And, you know, all I remember is we were watching Scarface. And then, like, whenever I come to, I just see, like, a couple guys I'm sitting next to, and they're just laughing. And they're like, man, you're really fucked up. And I'm just like, nodding my head, like, yeah. And then go back to blacking out. And then I went to, got transferred to Bailey, and then I fucking kicked. And that sucks. Kicking in jail. But, you know, it was easier for me to kick in jail than on the street. So that was, like, the positive. And so I had this clean date that I didn't fucking want. And I was in a really bad situation with the legal system. And they wanted to put me on drug court. And I was like, fuck that, dude. You know, like, they had me see Judge Green. And I was like, you know, he was the drug court judge. And I was like, I don't want to see this fucking dude. Like, what the? And I was telling my public defender, I don't want to see him. Like, I wanted to go back to the bus so we can, you know, take the, you know, get that early trip so I can, you know, go hit my rack at 4 p.m., you know, when everyone's fucking eating. You know, I don't want to fucking stay longer for this bullshit that I know I'm not going to sign. And, you know, I wanted the early bus. And then, anyways, it fucking didn't work out that way. They did that. And I told her I'm not signing shit. And then after that, you know, I went to court again. And then that was like the court before trial. So now I'm going to trial because I wasn't going to sign shit. They wanted me to do drug court or rehab in a little time. And I was like, nah, I'm not doing either. We're going to trial. And I was looking at 4 years, and I was really determined to do it. You know, I was so like caught up in my feelings and my emotions. And it wasn't like I was this tough guy that loved to go to jail and like I could do time. And it wasn't like that at all. I just had a fucking broken ego, man. And I just didn't, you know, really care about my life. And I just really just like pretty much lost hope, you know? And, so I was like, I don't know. We were eating chow, and my rep fucking wanted to talk about my case. He's like, oh, we're just asking, like, what happened? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to the box and looking at 4 years, but fuck it. Let's see if they're going to pay that $10,000 to fuck me, because I'm down. I'm down to fucking just do it. And he's like, wait, what? You're looking at 4 years? He's like, you're going to lose. You can't do that. And I'm like, no, fuck them. Like, I'm not signing shit. Like, my fucking lawyers, you know, should get a better deal, because I don't like theirs. I want to just, you know, I want to either do a little bit of time and get out, or just do all my time. I'm not going back to fucking rehab, and I'm not going to the drug court. It's just not happening. And, you know, the reason why I didn't like drug court either was because if you're not ready to change, then you're gonna cycle through jail a lot, and that I did not want to do. I wanted it to be the last time. And my rep kind of just, you know, pulled me aside, and he's just like, hey, look, you need to go to rehab, and you know, because you just need to get clean. You need to do it for reals. And I was like, ah. Begrudgingly, and then he brings all these fucking applications for all these rehabs, and now I'm signing them, submitting them, and it was so right when I signed, you know, they hooked me up with this dude named George Martinez, and George, rest in peace. He was working for the county. And his job was to help people get into programs out of jail. And George, you know, I met with him, and he was really cool. And he just kind of was like, so, wow, you seem like you're a pretty together guy. Your public defender said that you're fucking crazy and you're and that you're trouble. And I was like, oh, well, I just told them, like, well, you know, I just kind of didn't like their deals, and I didn't know how to act, and that's, you know, but I'll be good now. And he's like, all right, I have a good feeling about you. And then he got me into the San Diego Freedom Ranch, and it was really, like, you know, kind of brought it back, you know, because it was all the way in Campo, and I'm like, fuck, I don't know, fuck it. Nobody there, like, what the hey, is this a real city? And yeah, it was. And fucking it was like a, you know, the most un-California looking town in San Diego, and it's small community. And you know, I absolutely fucking did not like it at first. And I literally was like, oh, I could have just did 2 more fucking months in jail. Like, and they would have just fucking let me out, and I would just sign into another rehab. And, but you know, fucking thank God, dude, George gave me that connect, man. And I went in, and I at least it was easier than the other 2 rehabs, and it was cool in that way. And I was like, kind of still resistant, and you know, the house manager Mike was sort of fucking crazy, and he always got mad, and he always yelled at me like I'm his fucking, like, his kid, and his conversations always started like, what the fuck, you know. And John, when I first saw him, you know, he just gives me this big old smile. And he's like trying to ask me questions. I do not want to talk to him at all. I'm like, oh, I was like, where did I find this fucking guy at? What part of East County is this fucker from? And man, like, I literally just want to do my time and get the fuck out. And I stuck around, and I, you know, the recovery they have there, man, is just something different from anywhere else I've ever been to. And you get these guys coming in speaking, and you see guys take their tokens, and I really, you know, love the camaraderie of the San Diego Freedom Ranch. And I actually, you know, kind of just broke down that ego. And I, you know, because originally I was just going to keep just doing time and getting out, you know, something that I just know how to do, apparently. And I just kind of fucking just kind of broke down, man. I just wanted to do something different, because I knew I was fucked if I slammed dope. And it didn't matter if it killed me then and there, or when, I'm fucked. I'm never going to stop. One shot, and I'm fucked. And, you know, so getting over my ego and trying to do that first step, and eventually the second step, which I always felt like was the most important one. You know, you have to have God. You have to have a higher power to do business with if you want to, you know, you really, you know, get deep into the steps. And I have problems with religion and a lot of opinions. You know, I just, you know, it's, I hope people, man, you know, my listeners don't get too judgmental. I just, you know, I just, when I first heard of God, and, you know, my dad would even, you know, tell me like it's an absolute fact, and this is how the world is created, and this is, and these are the rules that we live by. And I just didn't buy it. And never connected with me, you know. And I was a Catholic, and I did all the fucking baptism and the eating of the bread and the wine and drinking that nasty shit. And I did something else too. I don't even remember what it was even called right now, but yeah, I did all that stuff. And I don't know, like, it never was my thing. I always had questions, I guess. And I, you know, and it's kind of funny, because I actually kind of do enjoy going to church now. Like, it's not like I'm against religion. That just never really connected with me. And now, in 2013, you know, I had to come to terms that, you know, I needed a higher power. So I chose my higher power to be Bobo, the chocolate Labrador that lives at the Freedom Ranch, you know, because he just made me happy. And I just thought that, you know, anything can be a higher power. So I chose him. And sometimes I even will even think of him when I hear the word higher power. And that's a fact. And, you know, obviously, you know, it grew into something else later on, you know. And for me, the higher power is definitely more deeper than my beloved friend Bobo. But I just, you know, really, like, came to terms that, you know, I'm alive for a reason, man, and everything happens for a fucking reason. And, like, I just desperately wanted to do something different, man. And, you know, digging deep into inventory and digging, because, you know, you're there at the ranch, you know, you might as well do something, man, because you could fucking work out and fucking play spades and shit like you're in prison, but, like, that shit didn't keep anybody clean, you know. That's just, you're just playing games. Like, you know, if you're, you know, serious about getting clean, you know, the steps is just, like, a great way, just one way, and a great way for me, you know, to do it. And so I got to it, man. And then I graduated the Freedom Ranch, and I stayed there for 8 fucking months, twice as long as I was supposed to. And I didn't really even get, like, any, like, hoorah about it either. They're just like, okay, whatever, you can stay here, whatever, as long as you want. And then I went to the South Bay Pioneers, and South Bay Pioneers, was a really great place for me too, because, like, I was really scared to come back to Chula Vista, and that place had so much structure, and, you know, and had a really strong fellowship. And my current sponsor still works there. Shout out to Rick W. And I really loved it, and I felt like I could finally, you know, live life again. That's not in jail or rehab. You know, I can actually be clean and in another place, and I can, you know, walk in these around the same fucking bathrooms I slammed open, and it's not gonna fucking trigger me, you know, to go fucking go cop. I can actually go on Highland Avenue, and it and it's not gonna be like this mind fuck of a journey. And man, I'm so grateful, man. You know, I did that, and I left the Pioneers. I end up getting a couple restaurant jobs, and I live with my buddy Robert and Julie, and that was really great too, because that was like my first time living independently, and Robert was doing good, and he wanted to stay clean, and so you know they were like my second family for a few years, and then I got off probation, and that was like a fucking giant thing for me. Like, it felt like graduating high school, whereas I didn't do that. I mean, I graduated on paper, but I didn't go to the ceremony. So when I got my 3-year probation to be done, like, it felt so fucking good to do that. And, you know, and in work and stay busy and productive was really awesome. And, you know, and I honestly kind of lost myself in it at one point, and because, well, you know, even 10 years ago, living in San Diego was fucking expensive, but like, man, like, you kind of have to, you know, stay busy if you want to live comfortably here, and I did that for a great many amount of years, and it turned into complacency, unfortunately, for me, and I never thought about getting high, but I've had some really bad days where I just fucking wanted to end it, man. Like, I've had days where I just had that depression where it's like, fuck, dude, I fucking can't stand living my fucking life, and I'm clean, and I'm like, you know, and so I lived like that for, you know, a good amount of years, and I definitely am proud of my sobriety, and I'm proud that, you know, I was one of the rare guys to just walk out of that life, man. But that malady would still be inside me, and I definitely felt like I kind of used the program at one point, because I'm not doing service, and I'm not really doing inventory and all that. I'm just kind of just practicing a first step really, really fucking good. And, you know, second too, but yeah, I definitely went backwards for a minute. And shit, man, I mean, during this time too, you know, my best friend Phil was constantly relapsing, and he was going in and out of different cities, you know. He also went to the Freedom Ranch, and he went to Long Beach, he went to Vegas, he went to Oregon, and you know, every time he goes to these different locations, he gets strung out, and it's like wherever he went, you know, he's gonna find it, and you know, he tried to run away from it instead of facing it, I guess, and Phil, you know, was again back on the streets, and this time in Corvallis, Oregon. And the last time I talked to him, it was right before his birthday. And after the conversation, I try to hit him up, you know, he stopped answering the phone, and his phone was off, actually. And I just see him reading my messages, but he wouldn't respond, and I thought that was really weird, and I pretty much put it together, because it's something I'm already kind of used to at this point. And you know, he just, you know, he's a creature of habit, and So like a couple months, didn't hear nothing. And December 11, 2021, I got a message that he died from an overdose. And man, I was crushed. You know, we had just, you know, we had this bond that I never had with anybody else in my life. And I really, really just wanted him to fucking get it too, you know. And he would get clean for a year. Maybe I think a couple times he approached almost two, but he would always go back. So when I found out he died, it fucking crushed me. But I also thought immediately, I mean, at least his fucking suffering is over, you know, because I know he was hurting inside. And I definitely, you know, I just, you know, how those memories, you know, of us starting out and now it's over, you know, is something that I didn't prepare myself for. So I started going back to meetings because I was super fucking sad and depressed and broken and hurt and and I'm just dealing with the aftermath of his death and, you know, all the crazy characters that come along with it. And man, it's pretty wild, you know. And going back to in-person meetings after, you know, being complacent for a while was a kind of, you know, a little strange, you know, because I felt like I was a newcomer again, even though I had time, you know. People always assume I'm a newcomer all the fucking time anyways. And I definitely just wanted to just, you know, get my mind off that pain and that hurt, I guess, I was feeling. And I didn't anticipate on really connecting with anybody. And, you know, I had a couple of friends that were still in the rooms and stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't plan on, you know, making any new ones. That's for fucking sure. And in, so like around 2022, you know, I was going to meetings regularly again, you know, scoping them out. I'm from Chula Vista, you know, so I'll go to a meeting here and there over here, but I would go all over, you know, just to explore and stuff like that. And, you know, recovery is a little different, I guess, now. You know, when I kind of went in, it was a little more militant. It wasn't so, you know, I don't know how to, you know, can I compare it. I guess it's a little more, more watered down, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's all the same. Nothing's really changed, but, you know, this, I guess it was a different crowd, I guess you could say. And I still, you know, I still definitely like have met some people though since coming back, and some of them are like my good friends to this day, man. And I felt like I could finally, connect with people again and stuff like that. Cause I definitely was lacking that. And man, I was kind of stunned too with this fucking fentanyl epidemic kind of just rising, and, you know, hearing people fucking dying all the fucking time. You know, it used to be just like, you know, a couple times a year, you know, it'd be a homie from rehab or a dude I know, you know, and it was just like, fuck, man, like every fucking, I mean, every month, every fucking week at one point, just someone else dying. And after Phil died, my homie Miguel died from an overdose. And I had still had Phil's candles, and I went over there and I, you know, saw Miguel's family, and I just was like, here, I just used some of these, but you guys can have the rest. And it just was fucking insane, you know, how many people were dying. And another dude that kind of started around the same time as me and Phil had passed away as well. And I mean, it just this epidemic was just fucking tripping me the fuck out, you know. And that is when I came across the great artist, Spider-Man. You know, he had his sticker. And I was like, oh, this is fucking sick. I fucking love that. And that will be, you know, is known as the first fentanyl logo. You know, I loved it. You know, everything about it. It was like, fuck yeah, dude. And I wasn't even really aware of the lacing of fentanyl, you know, like in pill form, and it would be in weed, and they're trying to kind of hook kids with this shit like the cigarette companies would. It was never like a thought in my head. I just thought that they laced it with the heroin, and they laced it maybe with the cocaine or some shit, like hard narcotics, you know, unfortunately meth too, you know, where fucking you're really not getting the desired effect. But, you know, yeah, it was like one of those, like, okay, like the hard stuff is being fucked with. But now it's like I wasn't aware of the whole everything, and all these kids that are fucking like 15, 16, 17 years old, man, and even fucking younger, just fucking dying like fucking in a faster rate than an IV heroin addict is fucking insane to me. And it blew my mind, you know, learning this stuff. And fucking, so of course, man, and I saw Spider-Man's logo, I was like, I'm all about this. Fuck fentanyl. It was not even, you know, something that I would debate. I don't care. You don't like the F word, clearly. And, God, and so I got a bunch of his stickers, and I was like passing them around, like sticking them random places and shit like that, having fun with them. And then homegirl Krista just was like hollering at me like, hey, how about make a shirt out of that? And I was like, man, I don't want to fucking do a shirt. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's so much fucking work and so much, like. And I was like, okay, if I do a shirt, it'd be one fucking box and that's fucking it. Like, I'm not, that's too much time, and I don't even have the money to fucking make that shit. Like, and, but I was like, okay, so I got together with some friends and they all pitched in like whatever for their one t-shirt. And then I made a box and that was it. And then, and it literally, like, you know, I wore it, you know, a few times to my meetings, and we took photos and put them on Facebook and Instagram. And eventually I created that Instagram, Fuck Fentanyl San Diego. But that was a fucking joke. I didn't think that was actually going to be a serious, you know, I thought I was going to have like maybe like 10 followers and me being one of them. And it just fucking blew up and people loved it. And all my friends that I made it during my recovery, you know, wanted one. And fucking, it just literally just took off like wildfire, and I couldn't fucking believe it. And I was like, I didn't even know what to do with it, really. I was like, oh shit. So I got serious and I made an investment, and I fucking bought boxes of it, you know, with Spider-Man's logo, and then that just all sold out. And and I was like, okay. And then I did other designs, and it was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, everyone loved the fucking message, man. And I, you know, and every time, you know, I fucking make this shirt, every time, you know, I see Spider-Man's art, I think of fucking Phil and Miguel and, you know, even Chris, you know. I was like, man, like, and all these guys I've met and throughout my life, you know, that are no longer with us. And, you know, I don't even give a fuck if you don't die from fentanyl overdose, if you die from alcohol, or, you know what I mean, any sort of relation to a substance. And especially, man, I mean, my sympathies for, you know, like all the youngsters that got fucking pretty much laced up and poisoned. You know, it's just, I just, you know, I mean, it's such a fucking tragedy what we're going through, and it's becoming a regular thing, and it's a fucking problem. And man, and I just, you know, had this thing going on, and it's just truly fucking amazing that, like, that I'm even talking to you on a fucking podcast right now. It's fucking mind blowing. Like, I still to this day, like I'm just so happy that, you know, like I'm definitely not the only one that feels this way. And I love the fucking message of this, man. It opened up so many fucking doors. I mean, it's not even fucking funny, man. And I literally, it's a lot more easier to tell you what state I haven't sent you. I haven't sent the merchandise at than the states that I have, man. I think I'm at 43 now, and, you know, seeing fuck fentanyl in Canada, seeing fuck fentanyl in Mexico, seeing fuck fentanyl in UK, and seeing it in Germany, seeing it in France, and all that fucking shit. It's just so fucking awesome, dude. You know, I 100%, fucking, I've always had love for the, you know, recovery community, man, but the fentanyl awareness community is also a really fucking beautiful thing as well. And that's something that I was never familiar with, you know, until I did fuck fentanyl. And, you know, I met some really amazing people, man, that just really just want to bring awareness. And that's all it is. You know, it's not about trying to look fucking cool and not trying to like, you know, be a show off, man. It's just, you know, like, it's like, you know, we all been affected by this fucking drug, man, this fucking poison that's fucking flooding our streets. You know, it's really fucking sad, seeing, you know, parts of my neighborhood just fucking flooded, and, you know, heroin's out of the picture because fentanyl had just did the takeover. And it's fucking, it's really bad, man. And I'm, you know, hoping that things change, man. Yeah, big changes, hopefully, man. And, you know, I am just one man, you know, but I definitely feel like, you know, being of service, man. And, you know, for me, like, you know, obviously I have to do my thing in recovery to stay clean and sober. And, but, you know, if I can, you know, carry a little Narcan around me, you know, and like, and, you know, try to like, you know, help out, you know what I mean? The addicts that are still suffering, or maybe, you know, do some like outreach, you know, and, you know, try to, you know, persuade, you know, the youth, man, like, fuck those fucking drugs. And, you know, you don't have to do that shit, man. And if you are, man, fucking cover your ass and make sure you have that Narcan on you, or make sure you do something, man. Make some changes, man, because, you know, you're going to be fucking dead. You know, and I really, really appreciate, you know, everybody that listens to this podcast. And I really appreciate, you know, all the people I've met in the last couple of years. You know, fuck fentanyl is, you know, still relatively new in the clothing game, man. But like, how many people it's reached out, man, it fucking blows my fucking mind, man. It really does. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to give a general deeper dive into my little life. And, you know, a fucking 11 years, dude, if a crazy motherfucker like me can do it, anybody can, man. I'm a straight up Tecato from South San Diego, man. I fucking love fucking opiates, man. And if I'm able to fucking get out of this, man, and just make some minor changes that turn into bigger changes, man, any fucking buddy can, man. I swear to God. I fucking really appreciate everyone that's, you know, supported me since my early days of recovery. I love all my fucking guests that I've had. I'm super excited for Carissa to hop on and be on more episodes. And I got a lineup for you guys. Really do, man. Once again, I really appreciate everyone that's come on, and I appreciate everyone's support, man. And I hope you guys had a little insight on how my life is, and I'm looking forward to doing more podcasts with you guys. Hope you guys take care of yourself. Goodbye. Buy the ticket. Take the ticket. Buy the ride.